Our forecast says there'd be a minimum amount of danger to Southeast Alaska.
Coming up on the KHNS Local News, the Tsunami Warning Center says the wave from an 8.3 magnitude earthquake could be noticeable, but not a threat here. And details on the Upper Lynn Canal Tsunami Warning System. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more after this news. Skagway and Haynesboro elections are on October 6th, and upcoming forums introduce the candidates running for assembly seats in both communities. In Haynes, the public is invited to attend a live candidate forum on Wednesday, September 30th at 6:30 p.m. in the Mosquito Lake School. For Haynes and Skagway, KHNS will air a candidate forum on Thursday, October 1st from 10 to 11 a.m. The first half hour will feature candidates running for two Haynesboro Assembly seats, and the second half hour will introduce the candidates for two Skagway Borough Assembly seats. The deadline for citizens to register to vote passed on September 6th. Early absentee and special needs voting began on September 21st, and the last day to vote absentee in person is October 5th. Polls in Skagway and Haynes are open for voting on Tuesday, October 6th, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Skagway's polls will be in the Assembly Chambers, and Haynes' polls will be in the Bald Eagle Foundation and the Klaheeny Valley Fire Hall. An earthquake in the South Pacific Wednesday morning triggered an international response system that would warn the Upper Lynn Canal and the rest of Alaska of danger in the case of a local tsunami. Guy Urban is a geophysicist at the Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer. As of Wednesday afternoon, he says the center is still monitoring the path of a tsunami created by an 8.3 magnitude earthquake in American Samoa. But at this point, there is no known threat to Southeast Alaska.
At this time, we are still evaluating that from looking at our energy diagrams for the way the wave may be propagating. Our forecast says there'd be a minimum amount of to Southeast Alaska. However, there may be some unusual sea level fluctuations, so the tide may look a little unusual. But if there is anything, it's going to be less than a meter. It should be a warning situation.
The quake occurred at 8:48 a.m. Alaska time, meaning the tidal effects should arrive in northern Southeast Alaska about 13 hours later, around 10:30 p.m. Wednesday night. The scientists behind those calculations began their work as soon as they detected the quake.
We were monitoring our seismic stations, an alarm went off. We came out to check to see what was going on. We saw the AFI station come in. We had a comment, it looked like a big quake. Approximately a minute later, another station came in. Once we get three stations within that period of time, we were able to triangulate on it and get a possible location. Once we had a possible location, we were seeing something along lines of eight. We waited another minute or two to make sure some more stations came in to get a better magnitude and a better location. We put out our tsunami information observatory message. We said there was no danger to the United States at the present time, although we would keep monitoring the event. And that's where we are basically now, 2 hours and 49 minutes into the event. My supervisor, the scientist in charge here, the director of the Warning Center, is now on a conference call with California explaining a possible threat to that area in about I'd say about 8 hours or so.
Urban is also senior watch stander right now, which means he's the guy checking the monitors all over the world.
We can see the whole world from here in terms seismically.
More than 400 seismic stations deliver information to the Warning Center, which monitors earthquakes and tsunamis that might affect U.S. and Canadian coasts, as well as Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands.
Our mission is to protect lives and property and timely disseminate tsunami warnings to areas that might be affected by the event of a large earthquake that created a tsunami.
The Warning Center is part of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, which oversees the National Weather Service. Although a tsunami in the Upper Lynn Canal is not imminent, it is important to know about the system, says Urban.
We're looking for earthquakes in those areas, and if they're large enough to possibly cause a tsunami, then if we think that happens, basically we put on a tsunami warning. At that time, we don't even know if there was a tsunami. All we know is we have an event large enough to possibly produce one. It's then we start looking at our gauges, which are located along the coastal areas, which are called mareograms or tide gauges, to see if a tsunami has actually occurred. And if we see a tsunami, we'll either upgrade or downgrade based on what we see from our data coming to the Warning Center.
Most tsunamis are caused by seismic activity, and 8s and 9s are very rare, with one or two occurring each year, says Urban.
So this is an unusual event in terms of magnitude. They get lots of earthquakes in this area. However, it's been a while since they had a quake this big.
But every once in a while, a landslide creates a tsunami, like Alaska's Latoya Bay mega tsunami in the summer of 1958.
We can't predict tsunamis. We can't predict earthquakes. We need large earthquakes in order to produce tsunamis. And about 98% of the time, tsunamis are caused by earthquakes in or near the water. On occasion, we get some created by a landslide. As a matter of fact, the biggest tsunami we know about was caused by a landslide that happened in Latoya Bay down in southeast Alaska, which lifted the water 1,780 feet high, almost a 180-story building.
If there's ever a threat of a tsunami affecting Haines or Skagway, for example, Urban and his team would spring into action by calling the Alaska Division of Emergency Services, which is part of the FEMA system.
There's somebody standing by at all times, waiting to hear from us.
And KHNS serves as the emergency broadcast system for the Upper Lynn Canal, airing National Weather Service warnings immediately after they're issued. Four Haines students were selected to represent their school in the Honor Music Festival in Petersburg next month. The festival gathers together all of the top Southeast Alaska high school musicians and singers for 3 days of supergroup-style band and choir music making. Matt McCauley is the music director at the Haines School.
I'm very happy. Three of the students actually sent in two different audition CDs, auditioning for different parts or different instruments. And, you know, we had to make some difficult choices. Well, where do we need them most? And Jay McDermade and Carissa Land were both in the top eight of the soprano twos and soprano ones, but there was more need for them in the soprano ones, so they were also placed where they were most needed.
An honor band and an honor choir participate in the festival. Jay McDermade, Carissa Land, Charles Baltzel, and Devin Broughton qualified for the honor choir this year.
We only had one student who made it into the band. Like I said, the competition was extremely skilled. That one student also made it into choir. He did two audition CDs, but the group had to place him in the choir because that's where he was most needed. That is Charles Baltzel.
The annual festival begins with recorded tryouts, judged by more than a dozen music teachers from all over Southeast Alaska.
This is a festival that occurs every year, and it starts by students making recordings and me burning those recordings to CDs and then traveling to Juneau with those recordings and meeting with all of the other high school music teachers in the region. And we all got into each other's motel rooms and listened for many, 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 many hours. We started Friday night at 6 p.m. and finished at 1 in the morning and started again Saturday at 9, and we finished all of our activities around 10:30 that night or so.
Hundreds of applicants submitted recordings of their auditions, with almost 20 from Haines. Skagway's music program did not participate this year. However, McCauley says it was not easy for judges to choose from the competition.
It was a lot of work, and I was told that this year there was a whole lot more participation from students. That last year the pickings were fairly slim, but this year competition was very intense, which is a really wonderful thing, and it was a great problem to have, to have so many really top-notch recordings to choose from. And we had to listen to many of the CDs over and over again because they were so close and competitive that it was very, very difficult to choose.
McCauley began teaching at the Haines School this year. Right before classes began, he relocated from Wyoming, where he taught music and also played some of his own.
I was an orchestra and guitar director by day, and at night I played jazz guitar in a community big band, which was made up of mostly music teachers from our district, which was a fairly large district, and even some teachers from other districts would come and play in that. I also had my own rock band, which was really exciting, and three of us were music teachers in the district. And that was pretty awesome. We played some pretty decent gigs, like a biker rally for and not the kind that wear spandex, the kind that wears leather. About 2,000 of them came up to Evanston, Wyoming, and we put on a really good show for about 4 hours for them.
The student singers travel next month to the Honor Music Festival, which takes place October 25th through 27th in Petersburg.
I think that Haynes will have a strong representation at the music festival, and I think they're going to have a really good experience. And these students who made it in did place very well. They ranked very highly in each of the groups.
Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell. KHNS News airs every weekday at 5:30 p.m. and on weekday mornings at 6:49 and 7:49 a.m. Then, a review of the week's top local news stories is heard every Saturday during Lynn Canal Weekend on KHNS.